Welcome to Murder by Nature, where we discuss true crime, mysterious disappearances, and unsolved cases. I'm Jasmine Hernandez, your host today. So, the end of the year is kicking my butt. It is so hard to record. It is hard to do research. It's just been a little bit of a whirlwind, and I think I'm just starting my research for each case just a little late by a day. And honestly, I'm just super tired. I got up, got everything going, did my research, had everything laid out, but then writing the podcast felt like it took forever. And this story was super hard to write. I struggled really hard with it, which is probably part of why this episode is now late. And then when I was getting ready to do it, I could not record. So this is a whole 2 days late, but that's okay. We're going to get started. We're going to get done. We're going to knock it out. Next week, we're going to be doing short stories. So there's a lot of Christmas-themed murders, and they're not like super in-depth. There's not a whole story that can take the full 30-minute episode. So I'm going to break it down into short stories, and we're going to go through those for the episode that comes out on Christmas Eve. So I hope you guys enjoy that. Or if you don't and you don't like the way that they get broken down like that, just let me know and we won't do that again. Now, as we jump into this case, the references for today are Murderpedia, Wikipedia, Real Life Villains, Instagram.com, Covina Christmas, Sinisters, Find a Grave, LA Times, Medium.com, WickedWee.com, Crimes and Curiosity, Tumblr.com, Crime Scene Cleanup.com, New York Times, RareNewspaper.com, Oxygen, A&E TV, and Psychology Today. Now, as we jump into this episode, I'm going to give a trigger warning. It is graphic and a lot happens. I will be posting images to our Instagram right after this and when this posts, so you guys will be able to see those photos. But again, trigger warning. There is an Instagram account up from this whole thing. Just be very, like always, be nice when you guys are adding comments to different things like that or researching the case on your own. With that, Christmas is a time for families and friends to gather around the holiday cheer. Most families will have holiday parties with food, drinks, and games and music, while others have sit-down dinners with a few selected friends. Christmas morning is filled with laughs and screams as children run to the tree to see what Santa brought them, and wrapping paper would be laid out across the room as they rip through their gifts. It's a time for family and happiness, but as you know, listening to this podcast, Christmas can also be filled with murder. As we dive into this case, I'm not going to dive into the Reddit forums that make assumptions about the family or the motive of why this happened. We'll focus on the facts and the facts alone. Christmas 2008. Joseph and Alice Ortega were celebrating Christmas as they did every year. Friends and family were coming over for the annual Christmas Eve party, and the house would soon be filled with their 5 grown children, grandchildren, and friends. The family played a game of poker that Christmas Eve, and the party was in full swing. But the doorbell rang in the middle of their lovely celebration, and what unfolded next was incredibly gruesome. Shortly after the doorbell sound, police received 911 calls from the Ortega's neighbors. The caller cried, "Come immediately, they're burning down someone's house." Bruce Jeffrey Pardo was born on March 23, 1963 in Los Angeles, California. He was born into a traditional family, but even with the perfect family, his life came with a lot of pain and trauma. In 1989, Bruce had gotten engaged to a coworker, and the two were planning a large wedding and an expensive honeymoon in Tahiti. Now, at the time, Bruce didn't have a lot of money and was living with his mother. So, to pay for their wedding, his fiancée would dip into her savings to fund the reception and put deposits on the honeymoon. But on their wedding day, Bruce never showed up. His fiancée would later learn that Bruce had withdrawn all the money from their joint bank account and used it to fund a trip to Palm Springs, Florida. And if life couldn't get any worse for Bruce, on December 31st, 2001, Bruce had been watching his then 13-month-old son. And while his mother went shopping and did everything, Bruce was supposed to be watching this toddler. Bruce instead was watching TV, and the toddler fell into the pool, and when his mother came home, Bruce was cradling the unconscious boy in his arms, screaming uncontrollably. It took hours of resuscitation and a helicopter flight to another hospital to stabilize the boy's condition. During this time, though, Bruce never left his son's side, and after a few weeks, doctors determined that the boy suffered from severe brain damage from the lack of oxygen. He was left in a paraplegic state, which would need constant care for the rest of his life. Now, upon learning about this, Bruce broke off the relationship with his son's mother and left his son. Now, although the child's mother never suspected Bruce of any wrongdoing, she needed to help to pay for these medical bills. It was $350,000 that kind of just piled up. But Bruce refused to help her pay them. In this case, she was forced to sue his homeowner insurance to get that money back. And the settlement was less than a third of what the bills even were. See, she did use that to pay down the medical bills and establish a trust for her son for the ongoing care, because with this sense of trauma, he was not going to live a normal life again. After the settlement claim was done and over with, Bruce cut all contact with her and their son. He never paid a penny in child support and continued to illegally declare the boy as a dependent on his taxes. Now, as Bruce kept going through life, in January of 2006, he met Sylvia. Bruce was a volunteer usher at the local Catholic church, and everyone knew him. They described him as outgoing, friendly, and he liked to be the center of attention. Sylvia had three children and felt like she found the person she was going to spend her life with. The pair quickly got married, but by the end of their first year, Bruce had become cold, distant, and miserable with money. This led to frequent arguments. The couple would argue about money, as most couples do, but the biggest issue is that they didn't struggle to meet ends. I think this is the biggest problem I have within this marriage as I was going through this research, is Bruce was an electrical engineer for a military contractor in Van Nuys, California. Sylvia was a secretary at a flower nursery, and the two had homes in Monterey. And Bruce also owned a Cadillac, a Hummer, a boat, anything and everything that you can think of, he had. So they were well off. Now, the issue stemmed from the fact that Sylvia made not even a quarter of what Bruce did. And even married, Bruce refused to open a joint bank account with her or share the responsibility of the children's expenses. Now, if you remember, Sylvia had kids coming into this relationship. Bruce had a son, but he didn't take care of his son. And Bruce felt like she should be the sole person responsible for their care, and she should do it on her own. So that left a big hole within Sylvia, because she felt like that they got married, they came into this together, and this is something that they should be doing together. But Bruce felt very differently. Now, if you remember, just a minute ago, we were talking about these other two events that happened in Bruce's life before meeting Sylvia. It wasn't until the second year of their marriage that Sylvia learned about the real person she was married to. And when she did, she could not forgive him for being so callous and didn't want to be held liable for tax fraud that he was committing by claiming his son as a dependent. They began sleeping in separate bedrooms, and in March of 2008, they separated. Bruce was livid. He fought her over everything, no matter how petty it was. Sylvia had asked Bruce if they can continue to live in their home until the end of the school year. She had a daughter in kindergarten, and she wanted her to finish it. But while they were away at a birthday party, Bruce tossed all of their belongings into the driveway. He didn't want them in the home if she wasn't going to stay married to him. He was angry, and he wanted Sylvia to feel the pain that he was feeling. However, this tactic didn't work with Sylvia. She had children to think of and her own life and sanity. And in the following days, Sylvia decided it was time to file for divorce and move back in with her parents. In June of 2008, Sylvia filed court papers asking for attorney fees and $3,100 in monthly spousal support. So they didn't have kids, but she wanted spousal support from him. She claimed that her husband had withdrew about $88,000 from the savings in about 2 months and was transferring funds into a private account. The situation became unattainable, and the continue of the marriage was an option, she said in court documents. Now, in July, Bruce lost his job at ITT and soon was drowning in debt while scrambling to find work. He begged the court to grant him spousal support until he can find employment. He complained in the filing that he had monthly expenses of $9,800 and ran a monthly deficit of $2,600. He also had $31,000 in credit card debt and $2,700 monthly for the mortgage. He said, "I was not given a severance package from my last employer at termination, and I'm not receiving any other income." Bruce was also denied unemployment benefits. He said he's desperately seeking work, but instead, the court ordered Bruce to pay Sylvia $1,785 monthly in spousal support, plus $3,500 for past payments. Now, when the divorce was settled, the court ended up waiving those past payments and Bruce got the house. But he also had to pay Sylvia $10,000 and return her diamond wedding ring and give her custody of the dog. Now, this made Bruce just go off his rocker. During the divorce proceedings, Bruce had confided to a friend that his wife was taking him to the cleaners. And in a court declaration, Bruce complained that Sylvia was living with her parents, not paying rent. She went on gambling trips to Vegas. She had lavish luxury cars, meals at fine wine restaurants, massages, golf lessons, anything that you can think of. And he was struggling. And as the trauma of everything started to spiral out of control, Bruce started stocking up on different types of guns. On August 8th, Bruce purchased a 9mm. A month later, due to California law, he purchased another one, and that evening, he ordered a custom-made Santa suit. Now, on October 8th, Bruce purchased his fourth 9mm, and later that month, during a trip to Iowa, he purchased 16 magazines for his guns. On November 13th, Bruce purchased his fifth 9mm, and he picked up the Santa suit. That's just, I can't with that. On December 18th, 2008, Sylvia and Bruce's divorce was finalized. Sylvia was done with Bruce and can move on with her life now. She felt calm and just super excited to move on with that chapter. Bruce was not who she thought he was, and to finally get away from that just brought her a lot of joy. Christmas Eve, residents of the quiet cul-de-sac in Covina reported seeing a man in a Santa suit get out of a blue Dodge Caliber. The Santa was pulling a very large gift wrap box on wheels, waved and said Merry Christmas to the passers. Little did they know that in a few minutes they would be calling 911 to report a fire and gunshot sounds. In the dining room of the Ortega house, Joseph and his wife of 53 years, alongside with their children, were playing a fun game of Texas Hold'em after their Christmas Eve dinner. It was close to 12 p.m. when there was a knock on the front door. 8-year-old Katrina ran to the door screaming, "Santa Claus, Santa Claus." Unexpectedly, Santa Claus stepped into the house and unloaded a semi-automatic handgun and immediately started shooting inside the house. As Santa made his way into the house, he shot the 8-year-old in the face, walking into the door, shooting two more partygoers as they rushed to help the little girl, dropping them to the ground. Joseph and his wife and their three daughters dived behind the dining room table for cover in hopes the gunman wouldn't come after them. But it was no use. Santa walked through the house, unloading multiple rounds throughout the living room, dining room, and many more. As chaos unleashed with the barrage of gunfire in the living room, relatives smashed through windows, hid behind furniture, and bounded upstairs in hopes to get away from what was going on in the house. Police speculate that the gunman may have stood over and pointedly executed some of the victims using other handguns. After the shots stopped, Santa unwrapped the package containing the homemade flamethrower and used it to spray racing fluid gasoline throughout the house. As the house went up in flames, family members jumped from the second story to try and save themselves, and others ran out the back door. Neighbors rushed outside after hearing the explosion of the homemade flamethrower. The neighbor directly behind the Ortega house ran out to the backyard after hearing three girls screaming, including one who was shot in the back. Trying to climb over the wall, they said, some guy is shooting in there. Some guy shooting. One girl said, a guy dressed in a Santa suit started shooting. Another neighbor came outside and saw three more partygoers fleeing the burning house. One of them was a young woman who had escaped from upstairs, but broke her ankle when she jumped out the second story window. Shortly after the victim started fleeing the scene, police started receiving phone calls. They were coming from the Ortega's neighbors. The caller cried, come immediately, they're burning down someone's house. The fire department was dispatched to the Ortega house, but the calls kept coming in. Some even reported that they heard shooting coming from the house, and when the police arrived at the scene, it was total chaos. The Ortega house was burning so hot, flames were shooting 50 feet in the air. It took firefighters nearly 2 hours to put it out. And when the fire finally was put out, investigators immediately spotted several heavily charred bodies near the front of the house. As they continued their search, they ended up discovering a total of 9 bodies in the ruins of a once happy family home. As the police attempted to locate all of the people who attended the Christmas party, they only were able to locate one. One person out of all 25 that they had in that house. Leticia had managed to escape the fire with her husband and her 8-year-old daughter and make it to a neighbor's house. But they quickly made their way to the hospital, as her daughter was the 8-year-old who had been shot. As police talked to witnesses, they were shocked to discover what had transpired within the home on this Christmas Eve. In the middle of the interviews, police got a big tip from one of the neighbors. Her and her husband had seen a car leaving their cul-de-sac at around 11:45 p.m. And after putting out an APB on the car, police started shifting through the Ortega's scorned house. The bodies were so burnt, dental records could only identify them. And when they did, they discovered 9 of the victims that were missing were the Ortega family members. They were Joseph and Alice Ortega, their son Charles and his wife Sherry, another son James Jr. and his wife Teresa, their daughter Alicia and her son Michael, and their other daughter, Sylvia. Nearly all of them had been shot with a 9mm weapon. The only one that was not shot was Michael. He was a 17-year-old who was sitting upstairs at the computer, and Michael apparently was killed by an explosion or a fire that started with the 2 tanks that were fused together and created a device capable of engulfing the entire home in fire. So he wasn't shot, but the one thing that kind of didn't go into play, which we will go down a little bit later, is when Santa came in and lit the gasoline everywhere and then tried to light it on fire, there were still open flames in the house from the fireplaces. And that explosion is what killed Michael. And they say that he was killed instantly. Now, while police were trying to piece together the devastation of what was coming out of the Ortega house, the neighboring town in Sylmar would also get a call to the home of Brad Pardo. Brad was Bruce's brother, and when he walked into his home from his Christmas party, he found his brother lying in a pool of blood. As police arrived on the scene, they found a single shot from a 9mm handgun in Bruce's head and a 9mm pistol in Bruce's lap, and a second 9mm on the floor next to him. As they continued to investigate the scene, they found a bullet hole in the ceiling and believe that there might have been a second shooter at the scene. As they continued to dive into the case of Bruce, they realized that he just got divorced to Sylvia, but not realizing that the 2 cases were going to be the linking clue to solving everything. When police started to perform the autopsy on the bodies from the Ortega shooting, they quickly noticed that they were killed by the same bullets that they found at Bruce's killing. On Christmas Day, the police interviewed Leticia and the other surviving family members. They were able to tell police exactly what transpired and who was responsible. Bruce Pardo. Investigators went back to Brad's house where they found Bruce dead and searched his car. And to their surprise, the car ended up being the same car that Ortega's neighbor had described seen on their street after the murders. Inside the car, police found a Santa suit and thousands of rounds of ammunition. The car had been booby-trapped to explode when the Santa suit was removed, and though the vehicle exploded, no one was injured. When Bruce's autopsy was finished, investigators were able to conclude he committed suicide, and there was no second shooter. The autopsy revealed that he had horrific third-degree burns on his hands and arms, and part of the Santa suit ended up melting to his body. Shortly after Christmas Day, a man reported a mysterious car parked in front of his Pasadena home. When police ran the plates, they found that the car had been rented by Bruce. And though that car was not rigged, it was packed with supplies, including a computer, clothes, water, food, maps of the U.S. and Mexico. Police believe that Bruce had planned on escaping to Mexico after his killing spree. Bruce's getaway car was also parked about 500 feet from the house of Scott Nord. This was Sylvia's divorce attorney. Police believe that Bruce had made a plan on also murdering Scott. Now, the survivors were among 20 to 30 people celebrating Christmas Eve with the Ortegas, and they never spoke publicly about what happened. But law enforcement sources close to the investigation confirmed that many of the relatives' descriptions provided the clearest picture of what happened inside that house that night. Bruce, dressed as Santa and pulling a large gift wrap box, knocked on the Ortegas' door around 11:30 that night. Many of the adults were at the front of the house because people were beginning to leave, making them vulnerable to this attack. 8-year-old Katrina rushed to the door to let him in, and as soon as she opened the door, Santa shot her in the face. And then he rushed into the house, a gun in each hand, shooting everyone he could see. According to relatives, one of the Ortega sons, Charles, recognized Bruce after the gunman shot his 8-year-old niece and his brother, James. "It's Bruce," Charles said, before being shot. Now, one of the cousins told investigators that James and Charles struggled to get up even after they were wounded, but they were bloody. They got up, they stood up, and they tried to grab him. They tried to stop him, but they couldn't. Joseph, 80, and Alicia, 70, and their three daughters slipped underneath the dining room table along with one of their daughter-in-laws, Teresa. Someone screamed, "Run, run." Only one of the girls survived, though, Leticia, the mother of the wounded 8-year-old, who, according to 911 tapes, had briefly hidden under the table. "I heard shots," Leticia told the police dispatcher in the 911 call. "Everyone started to panic and was running, and we all dove underneath the dining room table." Leticia made a break for it after seeing her wounded 8-year-old daughter stagger out of the house. A source close to the investigation said that although Bruce shot her in the face, the child may have saved herself by turning her head at the last moment. The bullet struck her along the side of her jaw. "I need someone to come over and help my daughter," Leticia screamed at the dispatcher. "She's bleeding. She's been shot on the side of the face." Some of the adults grabbed children and carried them out. Investigators believe that almost all of the young children were saved because they're at the back of the house, closer to the television, possibly playing video games. After running out of bullets, Bruce opened up a large box and pulled out a homemade flamethrower, which he used to spray the high-octane fluid mixture into the house, which he likely planned to ignite on his way out. However, he didn't know that there was already an open flame in the home in the two fireplaces, and those flames would spark an explosion. Police believe that Bruce had planned to escape and had bought a ticket for a flight on a Canadian airline from Los Angeles International Airport to Minnesota with a connecting flight to Iowa, where he was planning on visiting a friend. But he was so badly burnt in the explosion, and the fire ended up causing severe third-degree burns on his arms and hands, and part of the Santa suit melted onto his skin. Wrapped around his leg and was held on with a girdle was $17,000 in cash. He also had traces of cocaine in his system. Evidence would later show Bruce had also intended to kill his own mother, whom he believed had taken Sylvia's side in the divorce. But with the explosion at the Ortegas house, he had burned so badly that he couldn't follow through with the rest of his plan. Instead, he took his own life. This is what bothers me. He came into this house so angry, so hot, and just shot anyone that he can see. He just went in and decided he was going to take them out. And then he drove to his brother's house on Christmas Eve and shot himself in his living room. He had no regard for the trauma that he was going to cause to the children, to the family to his family for what he was doing. And he took his own life. At the end of it all, he just took his own life. Today, Katrina, the 8-year-old who was shot, transformed into a fierce activist against gun violence. In 2018, 10 years after the murder of the 9 family members, the young woman gave a speech after a serious shooting at an American school. There, she said that her family continues to celebrate Christmas Eve and Christmas, despite the fact that each year marks a new anniversary of the tragedy caused by her uncle disguised as Santa Claus. This episode, it made me mad. It made me sad. It put me in a weird funk. And I know that there's so many cases similar to this. But even through all that trauma, this little girl, well, she's not little anymore, but this little girl walked herself out of that house and was able to have the strength to keep moving, to take herself out of the situation, and then grow to be this amazing woman. And that's something that this man would never take from her. It's her drive, her passion, the life that she had inside of her. Now, I also talked about a girl that was shot in the back. She survived as well. But there was still a lot that came from this. Majority of the Ortega family was killed on this evening, and that left a lot of their children orphans. They've all had to navigate through this entire thing for years, and that's something that just changes people. We're going to have a lot of stories like this, and they all will affect me, because that's just the way that I am. But I also know that we have to bring light to these cases, and we have to be a voice for the people that can't have a voice anymore. And with that brings us to the end of this episode. As always, thank you for listening to Murder by Nature. If you enjoyed our show, please rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any streaming platform that you're currently on, and be sure to come back for our new episode. Until then, I am your host, Jasmine Hernandez. Don't forget to stay safe. Don't get murdered or murder people, you lovely humans. I'm also sorry for how jumbling of a mess this episode was a little bit. I was having a hard time getting through it, and I just couldn't put the words together in some parts. So thank you for bearing with us as we went through all of that. And I'll see you next week. I hope you have a fantastic week.